everybody. Welcome back to another episode of On The Mix. I'm your host, Lindsay. And today we're going to be talking about Jerry Lee Lewis and his incredibly messed up backstory with his seven wives. It's true, he had seven wives. And as the title suggests, one of them was his 13-year-old cousin, and another one was a woman that he married in the 80s when she was 26 and he was in his 50s, 60s, and after only 77 days, she died in his house. So we're going to be talking about all of it, though. The abuse that he inflicted upon these women, the addictions that he had with alcohol and with drugs. And we'll be touching a little bit on his musical backstory, but it's not really about his music. It's mostly about who this guy was. The wild life of Jerry Lee Lewis. He was born September 29th, 1935 in Faraday, Louisiana. When he was a boy, he got his nickname of the Killer after attempting to choke a grown man with his own necktie. His entire life, he had since been known as the Killer. His mother enrolled him at the Southwest Bible Institute in Waxahachie, Texas, so that he could sing evangelical songs exclusively. So, like most people that grew up in the South and in the Bible Belt, he grew up in a very small, secular Christian religion. He believed that even regular Christians were actually not Christians. Like, they weren't God-fearing like he was. Around 1955, he traveled to Nashville, where he played in clubs and attempted to build interest, but was turned down by the Grand Ole Opry, as he was already at the Louisiana Hayride in Shreveport. In November 1956, he traveled to Memphis, Tennessee to audition for Sun Records, and this is the famous label that Johnny Cash is on, Carl Perkins is on, and Elvis Presley is on. In December, he began recording as a session musician for Johnny Cash and Carl Perkins, and then he also developed his really intense way of playing the piano. He used to do this crazy thing where, like, he would play with his fists, his elbows, his feet, his backside. He just went crazy. He started his showmanship with his piano from very early on, and that's what kind of gave him a bit of an edge. But there was plenty of room for Jerry Lee Lewis at Sun Records, so. His own singles advanced his career as a soloist during 1957 with such hits as Whole Lotta Shakin' Goin' On and Great Balls of Fire. Great Balls of Fire was a song that he actually refused to play for a long period of time because he considered it to be blasphemous. When Jerry Lee was 16, he married his first wife, Dorothy Burton, who was the daughter of a preacher. He soon abandoned her to long nights with his mother and sister in Faraday while he played his first club dates. So he was really trying to get a name for himself first and foremost and actually not spend time with his wife. The marriage lasted from February 1952 till October of 1953. His second marriage was to a woman named Sally Jane Mitchum in September of 1953. And a lot of people considered this to be of not honorable validity because it occurred about a month before his divorce from his first wife, Dorothy, was final. So people considered him a bit of a bigamist. Jane's brothers came calling to Jerry Lee with horsewhips and pistols when she told everyone that she was pregnant by him. So now that she's pregnant, now that she's married, she's like, I want you to actually stay in and be a father. But he was just out there with the wind. He didn't want the life of settling down, but for some reason he kept on marrying. But he would take off. He would send his little sister to spy on Jane, branding her a liar and a whore. And he explained his bizarre marital history as saying this: I was 14 when I first got married. My wife was too old for me. She was 17. Then I met Jane Mitchum. One day she told me she was going to have my child. Her brothers were hunting me with whips. I was real worried, so I married her, but never properly. She divorced me, though she didn't need to. She was never my wife. They had two children, Jerry Lee Lewis Jr. and Ronnie Guy Lewis, and after 4 years, he filed for divorce in October of 1957. Well, it's just going to get a little bit stranger because this is where a lot of the controversy comes in to surround him, and a lot of people seem to remember this about Jerry Lee Lewis. So his third marriage was to his 13-year-old first cousin once removed. Her name is Myra Gail Brown, and he married her on December 12, 1957. When her father heard that they had eloped, he got his gun. And then Myra, who recanted later on, said, that was not a happy moment. Daddy felt very betrayed by that. I was his 13-year-old little girl. Her father ran after Jerry Lee, but Jerry Lee booked it. He was gone. He didn't want nothing to do with anybody. He didn't want any smoke. So he says, oh no, I'm not staying around here. He was gone for 3 or 4 days. We're not sure exactly how long, but he was gone for a couple of days. And Myra's parents ended up calling Sam Phillips to say, Jerry Lee is gone. He married our daughter. We don't know where he is. Can you come in to help us? So during this time, Sam Phillips comes in, and he was acting as mediator between Jerry Lee and her parents. He was basically trying to sweeten them to the whole marriage thing because he was on Jerry Lee's side. What more could he do? He was in a very odd predicament, so he just had to sit down with her parents, and he mostly tried to convince her father because her father was obviously extremely outright angry. Myra would go on to say, Sam Phillips was a real talker. Let's put it that way. He could convince you that whatever you were seeing wasn't there. And then eventually her father came to accept the marriage. Although he didn't do it foolhardy at all. He was very begrudgingly like, okay, I can't accept this. This is what it is. So he said, be good to my daughter. He eloped with his cousin, but the divorce from his second wife, Jane, had not been finalized when that elopement took place. So he had to remarry Myra on June 4th, 1958. At this time, he was 22. And again, just to hammer it in, she was 13 years old. At this time, it was very interesting in the music scene in this particular location because Elvis Presley was the biggest rock and roll country artist at the time, but he was drafted to go to the military. And he went to Germany for 2 years. So it was in these 2 year period here where Jerry Lee thought, okay, not in a dubious way against Elvis Presley, but just in a, okay, maybe I can have a start now, a further jump start in my career, and I can make a name for myself. Now people will come to see me as the main star instead of maybe a secondary guest to someone like Elvis Presley. So he embarked on a tour of England that was supposed to establish his fame worldwide. And all of Jerry's managers told him, don't take Myra to England because the press over there will absolutely beat you down to your knees. But he said, if Myra doesn't go, I'm not going. Myra recants, the only problem was that nobody told me anything. So when a reporter asked me, who are you? I was the one who let the big old cat out of the bag. It was a perfect storm. It couldn't have happened at a worse time, at a worse place. Everything just came together and a major explosion happened. So as you can imagine, when he arrived with Myra in London, he introduced Myra to journalists as his 15-year-old wife of 2 months. He's trying to already age her up because he knows this doesn't look good. So after only 3 concerts in England, people were booing him relentlessly. The press were saying that he was robbing the cradle, that he was an absolute freak of nature for not only marrying his cousin, but for marrying this 13-year-old girl, and they eviscerated him completely. Rightfully so. So unfortunately, the tour was canceled after only 3 concerts. When he came back to America, his single, High School Confidential, stalled at number 21 on the charts. Dick Clark's American Bandstand refused to book him, as did other concert promoters. But most damaging of all, radio stations wouldn't play his records. His career absolutely plummeted by this point on. He honestly didn't really have a comeback at all. Literally, his career was dead. It would never be revived. He would always be known as the guy that married his 13-year-old cousin. It was more normal, I guess, to marry young back then, but to marry a 13-year-old when you're 22 and it be your cousin, I don't even think people back then obviously were okay with it. He ended up having 2 children with Myra. his son, Steve Allen Lewis, and their daughter, Phoebe Allen Lewis. Myra was only 14 when she gave birth to Steve. In 1962, unfortunately, and very tragically, their son, Steve, when he was 3, drowned in a swimming pool accident. And that absolutely shook him to the core, but also it shook Myra to the core also. They were married for a long time. By 1970, Myra had filed for divorce on the grounds of adultery and abuse, stating that she had been, quote, subject to every type of physical and mental abuse imaginable. In the 1982 book entitled Great Balls of Fire, where it talks about her relationship with Jerry Lee, it states this: Myra never knew who would walk in the door in the guise of Jerry Lee Lewis. The man she usually met was the killer, the lean, mean honky-tonk pianist wired from weeks on the long road, depleted by pills as the road became endless, still on his way back up the ladder. He usually arrived unannounced in the middle of the night, wanting a hot meal and sex. One morning, she woke to find Jerry Lee and some of the band still drinking in another room, and then there was a massive fight. Myra called the cops. Jerry Lee knocked her to the floor and threatened to kill her if she ever made that mistake again. So this is where his abuse towards women really started to form. It's uncertain if his previous two wives encountered this side of Jerry Lee. We could maybe presume so, but there hasn't been any articles stating such. We can presume. So he was with Myra for a very long time. She was very young. He was trying to mold her into his perfect woman or girl, really. And of course, he was wired on drugs. He was trying to jumpstart his career again because, again, his career was dead. So he was very upset that this was happening. And I wonder if he blamed her in some way because he was angry at what was going on with him, and so he would beat her up all the time. Once, Jerry surprised her at 3 a.m. and complained that there was no supper ready. He, quote, entered their bedroom and thumped Myra 3 times on the noggin to demand why she didn't arise to serve her master. Startled from her sleep, she lifted her arms to ward off his blow and struck him. He grabbed her fists and beat her face black and blue. Look, Phoebe, Jerry said to their 7-year-old daughter, your mom has gone crazy. She's hitting herself in the face. Myra said drugs caused irreparable damage to their marriage and obviously other things. Before Jerry began using drugs, she said that he was silly, playful, and kind. The couple would have pillow fights, crack jokes, and pull goofy pranks like holding on to the doorknob from the other side of the door to stop each other from getting in. So Myra would go on to say his personality just became mean and nasty, and it was a whole different man. Just bad, you know? So now we're getting back around to the divorce. Again, she divorced him in 1970, and according to a friend, Jerry Lee was absolutely distraught over this, and he said that Myra was the only woman that he cared about except for his mother. Myra stated, yes, it was turbulent as a teenager to be his wife and to be a mother. But in going through it, I found my strength. And there's nothing wrong, and there's almost nothing that can knock me off my block at this point. I was the bad thing in his life. It was because of our marriage that his career hit the pavement. You know, you were judged for everything you did back then. I was called the child bride, but I was the adult and Jerry was the child. When I look back on it, how can you defend yourself when you're 13 years old? I mean, there's no excuse good enough for that to be okay. So as they're going through the divorce proceedings, his mother ended up dying of cancer in 1973. And also in the same year, his 19-year-old son, Jerry Lee Lewis Jr., he was an aspiring drummer, but he also was in mental hospitals and rehab for drug addictions about 5 times. So he was really struggling hardcore. He ended up having a freak accident where he flipped his Jeep on a bad DeSoto County road and he broke his neck and he died. So he had 2 blows in 1 year, his son dying that he loved dearly and his mother dying. Jerry Lee Lewis actually said this once. He said, "The loss of my mother and 2 sons got to me. I was drinking heavy. I needed a 1/5 of tequila just to sober up. I couldn't cut a record. It wasn't the marriages that brought me down." And then he said, it was just the passing of the caskets. So now we're moving on to his 4th marriage. It just doesn't look good for Jerry Lee. His 4th marriage was to a woman named Jaren Elizabeth Gunn Hat from October of 1971 through June 8, 1982. They had one daughter from their marriage whose name is Lori Lee Lewis. Jaren ended up suing Jerry Lee for a big divorce. She was pissed off with him and his treatment of her. Not only was he dealing with marital problems, but at the same time, the IRS were on his tail, trying to seize his concert receipts because he owed them a lot of money. The IRS ended up raiding his house, grabbing all the cash that they could find, selling his cars, his furniture, his TVs, and their search of his house ended up seizing cocaine and marijuana. In court, her divorce lawyer said this: "Your plaintiff would further show that the defendant has an extremely violent temper, especially when he becomes intoxicated on alcohol and/or drugs, and he has choked your plaintiff on numerous occasions, has beaten her up, knocked her down the stairs, and threatened her very life. Your plaintiff would further show that approximately 1 month ago, when your plaintiff called the defendant for financial assistance for herself and the party's minor child, defendant went into a rage and stated that she shouldn't worry about any support because, quote, you are not going to be around very long anyway. And if you don't get off my back and leave me alone, you will end up in the bottom of the lake at the farm with chains on you," end quote. And this gives me chills to say, but Jaren would be found at the bottom of a swimming pool, dead. Dead of mysterious consequences, mysterious all around. We don't know how she died, but she died on June 8th, 1982, just before her settlement in the divorce. Clearly, he was not joking around with that idle threat. You don't make a threat that specific and then she dies in that specific kind of way. She wasn't found with chains on her. She just was found drowning in a pool. But still, that's very, very scary. So now we're really, really upping the ante here. He has one woman that he married that died under very mysterious circumstances, but now we're revving it up. Now it's the time where we're getting into his fifth marriage to a 26-year-old girl named Shawn Stevens. She was a sharp and spunky girl from Garden City, Michigan, and she thought Jerry Lee was her ticket to a good life. She worked as a cocktail waitress at DB's, which was a fancy nightclub in the Hyatt Regency Hotel in Dearborn, Michigan, where wealthy patrons often went to go and party, and it was here that she met Jerry Lee. They married quickly on June 7th, 1983, and 77 days later, she was dead. On the day of their wedding, Shawn's mother walked down the hall to find out what was keeping Jerry. They were at Jerry's house. This is where the wedding was going to take place. He was sitting in the master bedroom with his friend, Dr. George Nicopoulos. Now, Dr. Nick, as he's famously known, was also the physician to Elvis Presley, who died a very mysterious death. It's said he died of a heart attack, which I don't think is true. He definitely was on drugs, right? He was given these drugs. Horribly, he didn't need any of these drugs, but he was kept given drugs by Dr. Nick. So Jerry Lee was just absolutely getting full up on drugs by this Dr. Nick guy. And he had his license suspended in 1980 for over-prescribing addictive drugs. So getting back to it, on the wedding day of Jerry Lee and Shawn, Shawn's mother says that she found Jerry Lee regarding three pairs of pills laid out neatly on a bed table. Two of each, three different colors. She didn't know what they were. She just saw that they were pills. Jerry Lee said that he'd be up in a moment. And her father was angry, who stood up in the hallway shouting, "What's the deal here? You marry my daughter, then you can't even come out and see us?" They were obviously blissfully unaware of the kind of man that he would end up being. Jerry Lee showed half an hour later out of his bedroom, mumbling an apology. He was obviously buzzed. He was drugged. He was slurring his speech. They couldn't understand what he was saying, and he wasn't in a good mood. So she has a sister named Shelly, and Shelly, who was obviously there at the wedding, said this: "I went into the kitchen and he yelled at me, 'What do you want?' I said, 'I just came in for a couple of beers.' According to her, he started pounding his fist on the counter, screaming, 'You scared of me? You should be. Why do you think they call me the killer? How'd I get that name, huh?' Then according to her, he slapped her face, and she said, 'I was trying not to cry. I couldn't tell my father. Shawn took us to a hotel near the airport and dropped us off.'" So literally goes pretty horribly on her wedding day. So her family's from Michigan. So in phone calls back to her home in Michigan, Shawn rarely spoke of problems in the marriage, which is common for people that are going through abusive marriages and relationships. they feel like they can't verbally describe what's happening, or they're in fear, like they can't, they're not able to. At one point, though, she told a friend that her life with Jerry was just like jail, that she couldn't stand his jealousy, and that she felt like she was watched by him all of the time. One day, Jerry's sister Linda was there with her children. Sean was there, of course, and her sister Shelly was visiting. So Sean and Shelly sat in the sun at the pool until Jerry Lee came out, looking mean and slurring his words. Shelly recants. He said something like, "I think you girls better get your shit together." And then he hit me on the thigh and slapped me across the face. Sean sat up to say something, and he hauled off and backhanded her across the face. He hit her hard too. Then he just looked at us really crazy and walked off into the house again. Well, Shelly was so upset. She said, "He cannot hit me like that." So she wanted to call the cops, but Sean, like most victims would, she said, "I don't think it's a good idea." And it mostly wasn't a good idea because the police were friends with Jerry Lee Lewis. It's a small country town and he's a famous musician. They all know about him and they let him go scot-free with whatever it is, right? So Sean's like, "It's not gonna happen and it doesn't really matter because nothing's gonna result from this." So Sean and Shelly, they go inside the house to where Sean says to Jerry, "Shelly's been as quiet as a mouse since she's been here." But Jerry didn't hear her. She was over by the record shelf and he started yelling, "Speak up, what'd you say about me?" And then he grabbed some albums out from under her hands and smashed them on the floor. Then he knocked her across the room. Sean said something like, "You're so mean, what's wrong with you?" She was sunk down into her big brown chair, and according to Shelly, Jerry Lee picked up a set of keys and whipped them at her head. She bent down to get the keys and she told him, "I'm leaving with Shell. I'm not staying here with you." So he tells her, "I'll show you leaving." And then he grabs her by the front of her robe and he hauls her off down the hall. He says to her, "You're my wife. I'll kill you before you leave me." Shelly left the house on foot. She hitched a ride to the nearest store and called her father. Unfortunately, Shelly, I wouldn't say that she left Sean there, but it seems like there wasn't really much of a choice, you know. It only got worse from here. So on August the 23rd, 1983, Sean's mother woke up in Michigan at 3 a.m. to a phone call from Sean. Sean said, "I'm leaving him if and when I can get away from him." Her mother suggested that she call back in the morning because it was very early. Sean stated, "I don't know if I can. Whatever you do, make sure nobody calls for me here." On this same night, though, a lot happened on August 23rd. This same night that Sean called her mother, Jerry Lee was spotted sitting alone in his Cadillac, stuck in a ditch off the exit ramp of the freeway leading to Memphis. The sheriff's office was called. Two deputies arrived at the scene. When Jerry Lee was taken home and his car was towed from the ditch, the deputies forgot, willful ignorance or forgot, to administer a test for intoxication. And of course, the incident was not recorded in the sheriff's department log either. The dispatcher said, "I knew not to log it or nothing. When I heard it was Jerry Lee Lewis, I knew it was just a community service." Very, very sad. And this is even sadder. The same night after Sean calls her mother, she made one last phone call to this man, Scott, back home. She was like his and hers childhood sweethearts. They were old flames. She loved him. And she was put off, though, from marrying him. I think other people were like, "No, don't marry him." So she ended up calling Scott's number, but his sister picked up the phone. So she asked if Scott still loved her. She also asked Scott's sister to meet her alone at Jerry Lee's August 27th concert in Nashville, Michigan. Sean asked about 7 times, "You're going to come now, aren't you?" Sean said she'd call back the next day to make sure about the meeting. And unfortunately, the phone went dead when she was in mid-sentence with Scott's sister. So it seems like she wanted to get out. She wanted to maybe go back to Michigan. She wanted to maybe see if Scott was available so she could be with him. She was making the plans to leave Jerry Lee, and clearly he knew it. So the following day, on August 24th, 1983, she was found dead in the guest bedroom of their house at noontime. EMTs were called by the maid, Lottie Jackson, who had discovered Sean in the guest bedroom, which was closed. Sonny Daniels, the first ambulance man, moved down the long hall to the guest bedroom to check the report. It said, quote, "unconscious party at the Jerry Lee Lewis residence," end quote. Lottie ended up showing Sonny into the room. It was spotless. There was nothing on the tables. No clothes strewn about, no dust. Just a body on the bed, turned away slightly toward the wall with the covers drawn up to her neck. According to the report, her neck was warm. So her body was warm, but there was just no pulse. He checked the eyes, seeing that they were dilated, and she was gone. The second ambulance man first responder, Matthew Snyder, also arrived to the scene. Sonny told him to go ahead and check her over. So as soon as they turned her over and they pulled down the covers, they checked her wrists and saw on her forearm a row of bruises, almost like someone had grabbed her very hard. He saw little stains of blood dried on the web of her hands. She also had a film of dirt over her body, as if she maybe like was face down in actual dirt or something. And according to first responders, it had appeared that she had been reclothed in her negligee and placed in bed with the covers drawn to her neck. Bloody clothes were found in a paper bag in the bathroom, and bloody gauze was seen in the billiards room of the house. It's unaware if this is related, but that was in the report. Jay McCauley was the deputy sheriff that came into the room at that moment. So he was getting information from Jerry Lee. So Jerry Lee was in his bathrobe. He was slurring his speech. He was clearly on drugs. He wasn't doing very good. And he was interviewing Jerry for about an hour while everyone else was looking at the body and stuff. The sheriff never filed a report on the long conversation he had with Jerry, but he did write this. Upon entering a small bedroom on the east side of the residence, Mr. Lewis was bending over the bed where a white female was lying partially covered by a bedspread. She was clad in a negligee. When I first arrived, Mr. Lewis's speech was heavily slurred, but he was alert and coherent. I telephoned the sheriff's office and requested a justice of the peace if the coroner could not be located, and an investigator. The latter was requested because there was no visible causes of death and because Mr. Lewis's bathrobe contained apparent blood stains and he had a cut on his wrist. So her body was taken to the Brantley Phillips funeral home. The morticians that were looking over her body were Danny Phillips and his father, John Phillips. So they performed an autopsy. They reported that Sean had traces of blood in her hair and under her broken fingernails. The bruises on Sean's arm had fingernail indentations above them, showing that someone had grabbed her roughly. Danny would end up telling reporters that her neck had discoloration. He commented this, "I'd never say Jerry Lee killed that girl. It might be innocent as a train wreck, but I'd like to see it investigated. To me, I just can't believe that girl just got to that bed and lay down and died. You just can't make me believe it." The following day, her death was ruled as no foul play, and they said it was a pulmonary edema, fluid in the lungs. Causes unknown, but they did end up suggesting that it was an accidental drug overdose. Well, she did not ever do drugs, so I think it's really weird that they linked it to that. Also, I don't think fluid in the lungs is in correlation with a drug overdose. Jerry Lee stated that basically she ended up taking what he thought were sleeping pills and then she passed away. Well, if it was as simple as that, then why is her body covered in all these bruises? Why is there blood everywhere? Why are bloody clothes in the bathroom? Like, why are her fingernails broken as if she was trying to defend herself? Why is her body dirty? The thing is, though, is that it's been stated and said that she was most likely in bed with Jerry Lee. They had some kind of altercation. She died. And then he asked the housemaid, Lottie Jackson, to help him move her body to the guest bedroom and take her clothes off, put on a clean negligee, and then tuck her into bed as if nothing had happened, and then place the clothes in the bag. And then at some point, call the cops. Also that day, it was reported that there were men coming in to install blinds to the house. When the men arrived to the house, they couldn't get inside. This was before noon. Jerry Lee wouldn't let them in for at least, I believe it was like half an hour's time, and then he opened the door. So clearly to me, Jerry Lee killed her. This is of my opinion. He killed her because he knew that she was trying to leave. He threatened to kill her and he made good on that promise. Whether he drugged her and then beat her, unsure, but that is unfortunately what I believe happened there, and that is slated to be what happened also. People seem to think that that is what happened. There was a police investigation with Roger Jones, who was the county coroner, as to the manner of her death, and this is part of that interview. So the policeman said, "You signed the death certificate, but you never saw the body?" Roger said, "Well, in this case, an autopsy was performed by Dr. Jerry Francisco, so I just put on the certificate, see autopsy." See, what I do normally is I get six people, bring them to where the body's at. We investigate. Now, strange deaths, you know, 25, 26-year-old people, bruises on the body, something like that. That's a strange death. There's no reason a 25, 26-year-old person should be dead. But unless you have an autopsy, you can't determine no cause of death. That takes the pressure off of everybody. The death certificate signed, that don't mean nothing. Death certificate just shows the people dead. No, I never done it like this before. I'm still in the dark. Far as I know, there was two people there, him and her. You gotta ask him or her. Hell, no witnesses, nothing. You gotta take a man at his word. So this was a botched investigation all around. The cops were friendly with Jerry Lee. They did not care whatsoever. Everyone had a suspicion that it was him that did it, but they wanted to keep blaming Sean. Oh, it was Sean's fault. Oh, Sean is a drug addict and she overdosed on drugs and that's what it was. It's not Jerry Lee's fault and all of that. And it's like, well, clearly that's not the case. And it was still ruled, even when it went to court, it was still ruled that it was an accidental death due to drug overdose, accidentally. If it couldn't get any worse than that, it actually does, because she was buried in his family plot. And it even gets worse than that, too. He wanted to make sure that her body looked presentable for the wake, because they were having a wake, right? So the family, her family, got to see her in the casket first. So her father puts a Catholic cross in her hand, and they close the casket. Then Jerry Lee waltzes in, but the thing is, Jerry Lee is wearing the same outfit that he wore to her wedding, which was a white tuxedo and a vibrant red shirt. But he goes to open the casket, and he was not happy with how she looked. And then he noticed the cross in her hand. He was mad that her family put that cross in her hand, because again, he believed, due to his own specific sect of Christianity, that regular Christians weren't as godly as him, right? They were like the fake Christians, I guess you could kind of say. So, but yeah, the funeral was so botched. Like, it wasn't about her at all. It was all about him and his sadness. Like, her family was just so upset. Again, she was buried in his family plot, and that's where it ends, basically, with her. So he has two past wives that died under very mysterious circumstances. Very odd, very odd. His sixth marriage was to a woman named Carrie McCarver. It lasted for 21 years, from April 1984 to June 2005. They had one child, Jerry Lee Lewis III, who was born in 1987. It's unknown if any abuse happened with her. I couldn't find anything. But his last and final marriage, I just don't understand what this man has for his cousins. But he married a woman named Judith Lewis. This was Myra's brother's ex-wife. So she was part of the family. And Myra's brother was also Jerry Lee Lewis's cousin. So I just don't understand. And Myra's father was also his cousin, because Myra and her brother are first cousins once removed. So Myra's father was his actual cousin. I just don't understand what he has for the cousins. I just don't understand. But they married on March 9th, 2012. That was the end of all the marriages that he ever had. Seven wives. Seven. Jerry Lee Lewis would die at his home October 28th, 2022 in Nesbitt, Mississippi, at the age of 87. What is so weird, truly, his death was mistakenly reported by TMZ 2 days before he died. A representative from TMZ stated that they had reported, quote, erroneously off of an anonymous tip. That's too much of a coincidence for me to really believe that it was like a fake rumor. An anonymous person called TMZ to say Jerry Lee Lewis is dead. But 2 days later, he did actually die. I don't actually know how Jerry Lee Lewis died. I don't know if it was a declining health situation. I don't know if it was sudden. I'm not sure. But I just think that's the weirdest way for Jerry Lee Lewis to go out, like, in that kind of way. Jerry Lewis himself was actually once quoted as saying this, and I thought it would just nicely wrap up the episode here. He said, "When they look back on me, I want them to remember me not for all my wives, although I've had a few, and certainly not for any mansions or high living money I made and spent. I want them to remember me simply for my music." Unfortunately, I don't think that can ever be the case because he has two women that died under very mysterious circumstances. He abused practically all of his other wives, also married his 13-year-old cousin. We don't need abusers like him in the world. We really don't. So his one claim to fame, honestly, Great Balls of Fire, which is a pretty good song, but he didn't even want to record it because he thought it was blasphemous and against God. Well, I think that's pretty ironic. And he totally bombed his own career because he wanted to marry his child bride at 13, his own cousin. And he was like, you know what? Yeah, let me parade her around. This is my cousin. And she is actually 15 when she was 13. And then, of course, he bombed his entire career. He never was able to have a comeback. He went into drugs. His two sons died, which sounds like karma to me based on the fact that two wives of his died also sounds like karma in some way. Very, very, very tragic, very unfortunate story. I feel really bad for the women that he married and that endured physical abuse, mental abuse, emotional abuse, and obviously the two women, the victims that did die at his hands. I couldn't find anything on Jaren in terms of if there was an official report into her death or what the cause of that was. I couldn't find a whole lot, honestly. So that one's a question mark as to what the result of that was. If there was an autopsy done or anything, I'm not sure. But clearly, he is almost like a Phil Spector kind of person. They're one and the same, just with their ways of hating women, inserting control over their lives in such strong ways that if you dare to leave me, I'll kill you. And then they actually do it. Jerry Lee Lewis got away with two murders at his hands. That is the story of Jerry Lee Lewis and his seven wives and the victims that he had in his grasp. Very, very sad story. But thank you guys very much for listening. I hope you guys learned something today that you hadn't known about before. And I will see you guys soon with another episode of On the Mix. Talk to you guys later. Bye, guys.